Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to show 105 of Absolutely Intercultural, the podcast that brings intercultural news, stories, and reflections directly onto your MP3 player. If you like this show and want to support us, please go to our blog at absolutely-intercultural.com and check out how you can vote for us in the European Podcast Awards. Yes, we've been nominated, which is a great honor. And now it depends on you, the listeners, as we can only win if you vote for us. My name is Laurent Bachmann, and I'm broadcasting this from Queensland. By the way, this will be my last show, which comes from Australia, because unfortunately, my exchange semester at the University of the Sunshine Coast is over, and I will have to fly home at the end of this week. So for our category Absolutely Down Under, I thought about what sounds I will remember when I think of Australia.
But in Aboriginal culture, in the places where they play this, it was the sound that the creator being first made when he blew air into people to start them off. So it was through big tubes, they went... So it's a universal sound of creation, they say.
After finding out what it sounds like when the creator breathed life into the first human beings, we will go to our next category, Absolutely Lifelong, where we ask ourselves whether people who are interested in lifelong learning have their own culture and perhaps even wear similar clothes.
Natural materials, people will always wear linen and, you know, natural colors and natural dresses. Wide and comfortable, nothing very artificial, nothing that's easily inflammable.
In our last category, Absolutely Distant, two Polish students describe what Gerd Hofstede calls power distance in his intercultural dimensions.
Yes, for example, teaching style in Poland is official, very official. We have distance between teacher and student.
So let us start with the show. As I'm preparing to leave Australia soon, in my mind, I'm trying to compile a collection of lasting impressions that I gained during my stay down under. Now, for this podcast, my challenge was to capture one specific sound that would be emblematic for Australia. For me personally, this would probably be the incredible bird sounds that I've already shared with you in previous shows. However, I have a feeling that for others, the sound of the didgeridoo captures the Australian spirit best. In a small country town in the hinterland, I was fortunate enough to meet a part blood Aboriginal and his daughter, both producers and players of these yidakis, which is the real name of these curious wind instruments developed by indigenous Australians of Northern Australia from at least 1,500 years ago. In our category Absolutely Down Under, I wanted to find out what exactly you have to do to produce this typical sound and why we call it didgeridoo.
We vibrate our lips, it's loose, it's rather like a horse going... That sort of a sound. Not trumpet, which is tight and intense, but loose and very gentle. Okay. So a good player can drone the basic sound easily for over a minute on one breath. Didgeridoo, the word, is not the real name of this thing. Okay. Yidaki is the real name. Didgeridoo is didgeridoo, and we're breathing on the do.
Okay, so that's where the name comes
that's
from.
That's where the first song they heard.
They heard the pattern, yes, of didgeridoo, da didgeridoo, la didgeridoo, la didgeridoo, and they said, what is that? And his only way to explain it, well, the sound that it is making is didgeridoo, so it is called a didgeridoo. Okay. But it was actually basically a breathing pattern for them to listen to that they actually played. Mm-hmm. So for them to do it at the same time, they follow the didgeridoo rhythm and the pattern.
On part blood. Aboriginal, and I always loved the sound, but I thought it took all your life to get it. When I was young, you didn't meet many didgeridoo players. They were full-blood Aboriginals, and I used to, when I saw them, would run over and sit and, oh, wow. And then, yeah, I was like 47, and one of my friends died of cancer. He said that he had no regrets in his life, but he would have liked a few more years to do some more things. And when I thought about that, I thought, well, there's some things I would like to do, and didgeridoo was one of them. And I don't do anything in halves. So I make them up in the Northern Territory.
Oh, right.
These are mostly my sticks.
The concept of doing it is quite simple, but it is like riding a bike. You need to do two separate things at once, and you need to basically join them together and develop muscle to be able to do them for a long period of time.
So how do I start? What do I need to do with my mouth?
So the basic thing, as gently as you can and as loosely as you can, vibrate your lips with a good seal around them inside the mouthpiece.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit too tight. So so it takes a very small amount of... Yeah, getting closer.
Yeah, that's too tight.
So I'm going to get one and I will play with you. So
okay.
I'm going to play tight.
Like you've had schnapps.
And then I'm going to go low. So very tight.
I think I need a little more practice for this.
Or a beer, maybe.
Or maybe a beer, yes. Maybe that's
to
it. Now, any idea why this has such a fascination for people, also over in Europe, by the way? And I'm sure that you see that sparkle in the eye of your customers.
An old man, a full-blood man, said to me, there's magic in it. People have to listen, he said, it's the sound of the earth. But in Aboriginal culture, in the places where they play this, it was the sound that the creator being first made when he blew air into people to start them off. So it was through big tubes, they went... So it's a universal sound of creation, they say.
I think also because this instrument you can only get in Australia, traditionally, it's very unique in that it is an instrument that is only in Australia. And traditionally, I guess, the termite only eats the trees in Australia to actually hollow out the sound, which then gives you, you know, a beautiful didgeridoo, I suppose, which takes actually 7 years for a termite to completely hollow a tree properly.
Him and a few friends.
Yes, well, not an individual termite, a termite and his friends, as Dad said.
If you're interested, I'd like to play you a small section of traditional music from Arnhem Land, where this actually...
Oh, yes, absolutely. Things I did not know about didgeridoos. Did you know that the instrument is traditionally made from eucalyptus trees hollowed out by termites? I find this difficult to believe, but perhaps it is even more incredible that in 2005, a study in the British Medical Journal found that learning and practicing the didgeridoo helped reduce snoring by strengthening the muscles of the upper nose, thus reducing their tendency to collapse during sleep. Now, this strengthening occurs only after the player has mastered the circular breathing technique, which we heard about, and which you noticed I have not mastered very well at all. Well, I will just have to keep learning, I suppose, maybe for the rest of my life. And this leads us to the next category, absolutely lifelong. We are still talking about learning, though. Can you imagine going to school again for the rest of your life and to sit in a classroom and listen to what the teacher tells you? Or maybe there are different forms of learning out there. Lifelong learning is often promoted by institutions of adult education, so we have interviewed Ulla and Beate. Both work for adult education institutions. Ulla works for the Volksuniversität in Sweden and Beate for the Volkshochschule Köln in Germany. I ask them whether there is a recognizable culture of lifelong learning and what makes people want to carry on learning throughout their lives.
Some people think so. I mean, if you think of the participants, I don't think so. They don't feel that they belong to any special culture. But if you think of the organizers and teachers and animators, so maybe.
Well, one could actually argue that lots of things in adult education originate from the Nordic or Scandinavian countries. It's no coincidence, I think, that the European program for adult education is actually named after Grundtvig, the Danish sort of father of adult education. And somehow I would completely agree with Ulla in saying that most of the participants probably don't realize that there is some kind of a mutual understanding underlying all of adult education, because they sometimes just come to learn, I don't know, anything from English or computing or yoga to whatever. But people who are active in adult education seem to sort of have the same background. I was, funnily enough, I was asked yesterday if I'd been with the Boy Scouts or the Brownies or whatever. And I find that quite a number of people in adult education actually started like that. Funnily enough, yes, I was with Deutsche Pfadfinderschaft bei St. Georg, even though it was only for a couple of years. But there seems to be this, you know, community feeling that you do something with people and you like to do things together and you're motivated to spend your time with others.
Do we look different from others? I don't know. But one of my colleagues in another Swedish association, we were going to meet a group of other people from other, because we are 10 different. And I met this one whom I know, and have you seen the others? No, but look there, down the street. There's a group. They look very funny. Must be them. And not very elegant, and, you know, and a bit odd, and didn't know exactly where they were, and so on. Nice. Must be our colleagues.
So what would you say the fashion style is of these people? Sort of comfortable clothes? Sort of no nonsense? Or what is it?
Well, comfortable, yeah, well, this is all a stereotype. I mean, it's a bit of a joke, but I think you could actually argue that natural materials, people will always wear linen and, you know, natural colors and natural dresses, wide and comfortable, nothing very artificial, nothing that's easily inflammable.
Vegetarian shoes, maybe? Okay. Now, how would you say the values are reflected there? Do you think that this is because these people have similar values?
I'm not sure, but something, maybe, probably you have something in common. Because in Sweden, I mean, we're not bound by curricula decided by the state. We are free to adapt courses and studies to the needs of the participants, and so it's more creative in a way. And you can do new things more easily, and you'd have to wait for decision from above.
Right. What are you particularly proud of when you've done something good during the day? Which are the things that make you like yourselves in the evenings? I mean, there are those moments. There are plenty of moments where we think, oh my God, I wish I hadn't been there in that meeting. But what are the moments in your day when you're pretty happy that you are working for adult education?
I mean, everything we're saying here is a generalization, but I find that people tend to be very grateful. For some reason, I'm just thinking, I had a meeting last week with a colleague who hasn't been in the job for longer than 6 months now. And he said, he had organized a conference, and he said he'd done many things like that before, but this was the first time that he'd actually got positive feedback. 6 people had actually written to him and thanked him for the conference and saying how much they'd enjoyed it. And that, of course, what more can you ask for in work?
Well, I mean, if that kind of situation occurs, that's, of course, very, very good. But you feel that now. Oh,
I did something which was appreciated by others, and I got feedback and so on. I mean, for us who work with administrative and organizational work, you never hear anything as long as everything works well. But if it doesn't, then you get it back as a criticism. But if you organize a conference or something like that, when you meet people, living people around you, I mean, you get immediate feedback.
I think what's really rewarding in adult education is that you meet people who, out of their own free will, want to learn something. They are motivated. They want to go out and not stick to the same old paths that they've always had. And that's really nice.
I could not agree more. It is incredibly rewarding to work with people who, out of their own free will decide to improve themselves and constantly set themselves new challenges by integrating into new learning situations. Now, two of these people are Jacob and Mariusz, two Erasmus students from Poland who spent a summer semester at Rhein A Campus in Remagen. In our category Absolutely Distant, they describe a stark difference between the student-professor relationships in Poland and in Germany. Gerd Hofstede describes the intercultural dimension behind this as power distance. It is defined as the extent to which the less powerful members of institutions, in this case the students, expect and accept that power is distributed unequally. Now, the observation of the two students totally confirms Hofstede's theory. Power distance in Poland is much higher than in most other European countries, and in particular than in Germany. So it was to be expected that Polish students found the idea of a German professor as a colleague and a friend very disturbing. However, we started our interview with the Polish students' observations about Europe. They report that while the European idea is still new and exciting in Poland, the Germans do not seem to appreciate or even question it any longer, because they simply take Europe for granted.
Yes, for example, before Poland joined the European Union, we knew a lot of information about Europe. We are interested about Europe, about European Union, and in German, the German people are so not so enthusiastic to Europe. I mean, they know, oh, European Union, you are European Union, but they actually don't know what is this European Union, how many countries is in the European Union, and
You would say Polish people are better informed about Polish students.
Maybe that is that we are in European Union 5 years and we are fresh. We are fresh in the European Union and we are young and we know a lot of things about European Union. But the German are a long time in European Union and they don't need this. Some information.
And I think German people interesting in Europe. For example, in university is a lot of leaflet about union.
Now, I would like to ask you about the teaching style and the learning style in Germany. Did you notice any differences between your home country and Germany?
Yes, for example, teaching style in Poland is official, very official. We have distance between a teacher and student.
How do you notice that in a lecture? It's more formal?
It's more formal. But for example, we don't speak with the professors, with the teachers. Oh, I was yesterday in party and sorry, I'm not ready and...
Okay, so you wouldn't have any private conversations with your professors at all?
Yes, for example, here in Germany, here in university, I see that the teachers have some jokes about life, or the students are happy and they are smiley, the teachers are smiley and everything is okay. And in Poland, it's official, it's very official, we have distance.
Sometimes we go to the pub with our teacher for a beer. And we're speaking.
You're talking about Poland?
Yes, Poland.
Yes, but I must say this is after university, after when I am absolvent, then I can go, I can do this. But when I'm a student, this is not so good.
Okay, so while you're a student, you have a little more distance to your teacher. And once you're graduated, you're kind of on the same level. and you can meet the teacher privately as well.
Yes. This is this thing.
Also. Different levels of power distance in different countries are often the cause of misunderstandings for students who spend a semester at a foreign university or who do their internship abroad. It makes sense to check out Gerd Hofstede's findings for each country you travel to before you pack your suitcase. On our blog, we will point you to pages where you can easily compare power distance in different countries through bar charts. Now, if you've enjoyed this show and you go to our blog at absolutely-intercultural.com, please also go to the button where you can vote for this podcast to win the European Podcast Awards. Our chances depend totally on your activity, so please put in these 3 minutes and help us win this prestigious award. In our comment section, you can also suggest topics for future shows and let us know if you have any own intercultural experiences you would like to share with our listeners. Our next show will be coming to you from Anne Fox in Denmark on the 2nd of April. Until then, bleiben Sie absolut interkulturell. Absolutely intercultural.
Vollständig interkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.